some questions, you got some answers. Tell me please, please, please. Tell me please, please, please. Tell me please, please, please.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of the Drilled with Dr. Brady podcast. I am Dr. Brady. We have a special treat today. Unprecedented times is what you keep hearing. And so we're having an unprecedented Drilled with Dr. Brady podcast boiling down some politics. All right. We got some post-election commentary because, you know, you can never get enough of that out there. And we got one of our favorite Facebook agitators, Dr. Wade Pilling, to come in and give us his take on what's going on, what we should be looking for, how this affects us, what we're afraid of, what we're not afraid of, all kinds of different types of things. For those of you who maybe don't want to hear about politics from the perspective of a dentist, now would be a good time to tune out. But if you're interested, which I think is kind of interesting, tune in. Welcome Wade Pilling to the program. Dr. Wade Pilling, thank you for showing up today. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me, and hi to everyone out there.
This is our fourth time trying to get this started in the last like 10 minutes, and it's looking like we got all our levels in and everything's looking good right now.
Yeah.
Thank you for being so patient. Let me ask you this. So first of all, here's a caveat just to start this off. I don't really know Wade very well. This is our first interaction here. So if he says anything, I'm totally just going to be like, I don't even know that guy. He's just some guy. So I'm going to start off with that. Wade, are you the type of guy who's glued to the TV on election night? Or are you kind of like whatever?
I'm very whatever. I mean, I think I turn on for a few minutes and then I was like, we're never going to know anyway. It's just not my style to waste time on things like that. I'm interested in the outcome of the election and as well as some other things, but I didn't really stay glued to it. And I haven't really checked much this morning, other than on Facebook to see what's going on. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, I'm not too bothered by it.
Oh, I'm the opposite.
Pretty neutral. I'm pretty neutral. I don't necessarily care who wins to a certain degree. I mean, I'm pretty largely sheltered from a lot of it as well as a lot of us are. I think we'll be fine with whoever's president, but I think it's just interesting how politics and policy work. So I stay interested that way.
So you are living and practicing dentistry in Boise, Idaho, and you are, let's give some history here. You are Canadian by birth. Is that correct?
Yep.
And when did you immigrate into the United States?
So after high school, you know, graduation present, my parents gave me some luggage and kicked me out. And so I came to the U.S., you know, wanted to escape the communists up north in Canada.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Yeah. Need to get out of there, come to the U.S., find a female, you know, wife who's American and get my anchor baby and set up shop here, you know, and was able to do that. And
dang.
So, yeah, just had to escape the communists. And the most motivator was it's much warmer down here.
And mission accomplished. You got an anchor baby times six, right? You got six little ones.
I got six kids, not little anymore. I mean, my oldest is 19. I've got one boy and five girls.
Whoa.
Teenagers, 19 all the way down to eight.
That is an interesting dynamic. Oh man. All right. So you have dual citizenship, but you are allowed to vote in American elections.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am. And I've been voting, you know, ever since I came down here pretty much as I can, sometimes multiple times in an election.
Let me ask you this. So I hear this about Canadians. I hear this from Canadians that America is super unique in that. And to me, this is a recent thing, but in that nobody cares who you vote for in Canada, that, people can still be friends if they vote for opposing parties. Where here in America, the criticism is that's kind of diminishing as far as possibilities. Do you get that from your current ties to Canada, that Canada is a little bit more whatever and United States is a little bit more demanding that you vote and think a certain way?
I'm going to tell you that that's the perception they want you to think. Canadians aren't as polite as you as they want you to pretend they are. Canada has their problems.
I already know this. I'm letting you tell the story. I'm setting up. Yeah. I'm setting up the questions that I already know because I met some Canadians and some of them are dicks. So, So tell me. Yeah, keep going on that line.
So yeah, we would love for you to think we're really polite and everything's peaceful and nice up there, but no, it's pretty heated. You know, politics again. My friend in high school, you know, his dad was the Prime Minister of Canada eventually. You know, and so I knew a lot about politics and got involved in it. It's just as heated as it is down here. And they like to think that maybe Americans just, we hate each other over politics. And there is a certain sector that is, but yeah. Gosh, we all know people on both sides. And at the end of the day, we all get along. This stuff on Facebook, everyone fighting, hate each other. It's all silliness. It's all division. I mean, at the end of the day, I've got liberals in my family. I've got a Bernie supporter for brother-in-law, right? He wants a portion of my wealth every year, and I managed to get along with him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, I think, you know, we're not as divisive as the media would like us to think, and Canadians may think we're this divisive, but I think in person we're not. I think social media just blows everything up bigger than it is. I mean, when it comes to politics, I think we can all get along and like people on both sides. Now, the other day I was driving my daughter home. From rock climbing practice, and she asked me, like, she's 12, she's like, are liberals bad people? Because she keeps hearing these things, you know, at school or whatever. And I said, absolutely not. I said, liberals are really good people, just with really dumb ideas about how to run the country. That's about it. I said, you have family members.
They're just dumb. Yeah.
They're just dumb. I like, look at your daughter, look at your little sister. She's awesome, right? I still wouldn't let her run my business, right? It's the same thing. Great people just don't want them running, you know, policy and things like that. And I think that hopefully that clicked with her. But like, really, at the end of the day, we all really want the same thing for the most part, except a certain few. But for the most part, we all want the same thing. We just want to go about it different ways of getting there.
Yeah. And I would say I would agree with you for the most part. Let me tell you this. I have a few personal interactions with people who, and the only interactions I've had, so I'm conservative, and I did not vote for Trump. I'll say that I did not vote for Trump. I did not vote for Biden. I voted for Joe Jorgensen, and I know I'm throwing away my vote. Whatever, I don't need to hear that. But, so, you know, being conservative, I'm around a lot of conservatives. And the only instances of this type of like vitriolic type of bitterness, and I have multiple examples of this in my own family with in-laws and close friends, is that I do notice that some leftists, some people who align themselves with the political left of America, they seem to have problems with family members or close friends who voted for Trump. And I've never seen this with Obama, Mitt Romney, Obama, John McCain, Bush, Gore, going back, all Bush, Kerry. I never noticed that. Maybe I was too young and it was happening and people were like, oh, I can't believe you would vote for George Bush, or I can't believe you would vote for John McCain or Mitt Romney. Obviously, Trump brings something out of people that is brand new for sure in politics. But I do notice this. And so I see it like multiple examples in my own family of people I know who have to like shut down certain communications because they just can't come to terms with the idea that someone in their family is a Trump supporter. Do you think that's new?
I think it's hold my beer. It's not new, but it's next level. Right, they just said, "Oh, you're going to be like this about Obama. Well, hold my beer. I'm going to be this way about Trump." It really is. It was here when Obama was in presidency. You know, there were certain people on the right that, and I myself even found my time occasionally, you know, just overinflating things, getting upset over scandals. Like, oh, he won't wear a pin. He must hate America. He wore a tan suit. You know, people would blow things up like that. You know. Bring the worst, the little things Obama did would bring the worst out in some of the right. Very few, but some of them. Enough that I think when the left just became angry over it, said the only reason you must oppose Obama is because you're racist, right?
Yeah.
No one, at that point, no one wanted to have logical factual policy arguments at that point. It became more emotional. And then once Trump flipped it, they were going to like one up us on the emotion. It's like a pendulum swing.
Right.
And, you know, they did, and they encompass everything in Trump. It brings out the worst, and they encompass it and they put it on you because you would dare vote for him. So my approach to politics is not emotional. I think emotion has a role in life, but usually for me, in some things it comes first, but in a lot of things, I'm very logical and factual. To me, I want to lay out the facts. I want to lay out the truth, the knowledge. And then at the end of the day, if you want to use some emotion to sway yourself one way or the other, great, that's fine. But have we looked at the facts and the evidence? Now everyone wants to jump straight in with the emotion and say, well, you must be all of these things. I'm like, well, if people say, well, you support Trump. I'm like, define support. I try to get back to the facts. I'm like, define support. Tell me what support means. Because voting doesn't mean I support him. It just means I voted for him because mm-hmm. I had a choice between two or three people. I mean, you know, people just don't want to get back to facts. They want to just jump straight to the emotion and paint you a certain way because you voted rather than actually ask a question. Like I've had conversations with people on Facebook, and there's Facebook dentists. I mean, some of them are pretty garbage people. It's just amazing. Definitely. Like they will create a whole narrative about you and what you believe without even asking you a simple question. And I always try to pull it back. I'm like, well, where did you get that? Was there something I said? I mean, how could you know that about me without even asking the simple question of, do I believe this? Do I want this? You know, they just think, oh, you voted red. Boom. These are all the things I already have about you that I know must be true about you. This is not how I approach politics. I don't come in emotionally hot and then try and paint everything away. I like to logically look at the facts and then at the end decide. And if you want to put some emotion in it, great. But to me, I don't lead with emotion like most do.
Yeah. You know, we are intelligent beings and we're emotional beings. And so those two things, our minds and our hearts, kind of play a part. And it definitely seems like some people, I guess, I think we all struggle with this. I think about this all the time, man. Like how do I turn my head off when I'm supposed to turn my head off? And then how do I turn my heart off when I'm supposed to turn my heart off? And when's the appropriate time to let one lead the other? Because there's definitely times where it's like, man, I get regrets sometimes about, man, I was too emotional, or I definitely wasn't thinking with my head when I made that decision. And so, man, I think that's like a life struggle that we all go through is when to lead with your head and when to lead with your heart, you know?
Yeah. And you're right. There's far left and lefties and even some liberals that are just taking that stance that I hate you. I got ties with you. It's like, really, has it come to that? Like, I get it. Like, take it from one who was maybe a little bit too partisan about Obama. Like, time to step back. Like, I look back at my time during Obama and I thought, I didn't think things were the end of the world like some people think now if Trump wins. But I did think, gosh, this isn't good for America. This is bad. There's all these bad things that can happen. And now I look back and you're like, you know what? I did fine under Obama. I thought some of his policies were dumb. I think he was very divisive. I think he was, you know, inexperienced. I think he was, you know, we'll go down as not a great president policy-wise. Made a lot of mistakes and a lot of lies. But at the end of the day, I did okay, because we have other checks and balances. You know, whether we had Congress, we have the Supreme Court, we also have freedoms of our states. You can choose to live in a state if you don't want to live under certain policies. So I look back and I always tell people, like, I was fine under Obama. You will be fine under Trump. And I will be fine under Biden or Harris or whoever's next. You know, as long as, you know, we uphold the Constitution, because, you know, I came from Canada. And so I learned American politics from what the founding fathers wanted. And then when I came to America, I was like, gosh, you guys aren't really doing it the way it was set up. You know, it's kind of interesting. But like, I look at what the founding fathers, you know, set up, and they wanted the president to be very, like, not very powerful. He wasn't supposed to be a king. He's not supposed to be very powerful.
Yeah.
Yet we've granted so much power. So my feeling is if we follow the founding fathers wanted, it doesn't totally matter who's in office, right? I mean, Trump's not a dictator. He's not Hitler. Let's stop with the hyperbole. He's just, you know, he's an orange man and he does dumb stuff, but he also does some good stuff, right?
Yeah.
So we at least look at that. Like, at the end of the day, you know, the president isn't supposed to have that much power. So really, it shouldn't affect us that much.
You know,
but everything's the end of the world now.
Well, that's true. And you mentioned the Hitler. Let's get into Hitler. That's important. So
yeah,
you know, there's only two choices. At least that's what we've been groomed to believe. Now, I actually really, really oppose that idea that there's only two choices. There's a book called Hate Inc., like hate as in like Hate Incorporated, by Matt, I think it's by Matt Taibbi, and it's a very, very, very good book. But it basically lays out like the way to create this kind of division and create hate is to convince the masses that there's only two decisions, and that one of them is Hitler. And that's literally what the text of the book says. And that's literally what both sides are doing. I mean, the Nazi SS analogies are on the right and on the left, you know. Kamala Harris and Biden are just as targeted by those types of paintings, you know. So you know, that's why I'm a big proponent of third parties. I think, you know, to me it's like, what if there were only two NFL teams? Like, we would have murdered each other years ago. Like, if there was only the Seahawks and the Steelers, of course you're an idiot if those are your two choices and you choose the Steelers. You must be an idiot, right? Like, you must be Hitler. So I could see, like, where, like, you know, multiple decisions. To me, I don't know, how do you feel about that, about a third party options? Is that a waste to you? Do you think that that's when you hear someone voted third party, do you feel like, you kind of threw away your vote? How do you feel about that?
I think third parties, in order for a third party to work, we have to trust the other side, right? Like, there's a third party, a moderate middle group. For me to throw my vote that way, then I have to also trust that someone in who's normally a Democrat, who isn't happy with the way the Democrat party is going to also vote that way for a third party candidate. So it has to be trust that people are going to vote their conscience for the party they want best rather than vote to win. So say there's a third party Libertarian. If I was in a swing state, I wouldn't vote for the Libertarian Party, even though I'm Libertarian typically in my beliefs,
yeah,
because I would have to trust that someone on the Democratic side would also vote Libertarian or third party or fourth party, you know, but I don't trust them. I would think that no, they're going to vote to win. They're through and through Democrat, live or die, right?
Yes.
I think you find more Republicans willing to branch off than Democrats typically, you know, but you'd have to trust the other side to also do the same. So you wouldn't be throwing away your vote. And I don't necessarily trust that.
Right.
So that's my feeling on a third party, that it is.
Yeah. Libertarians, are definitely siphoning off like Republican votes. Right. But you have people like the Green Party, which isn't as prominent as a third party. You know, the Green Party siphons off votes from the Democrats for sure. So yeah, you got some different parties going either way. My contention,
yeah, if I could trust the other side would do that, I would be for it. But I don't think we have enough trust across the aisle in our, you know, fellow citizens. We think now they're going to take advantage of the Libertarian Party and just vote Democrat and split our vote.
Well, no one's going to, I mean, like, a disenfranchised Democrat is probably going to vote for Trump, and a disenfranchised Republican, like the Lincoln Project Republicans, they all are anti-Trump Republicans, and they're all voting Democrat. They're all endorsing Biden, right? And they raised tons of money for Biden. And, you know, I always wonder, like, why like there's not, those aren't the only two options. And it's so crazy because, you know, it's two options can never represent a country of 330 million, like, individual free thinking people. And that's the thing, sure, is that now you have this duopoly of two choices, and you know, the white vote and the gay vote and the black vote and the Hispanic vote are all like these monolithic type of descriptions where it's like, they're just one, they all vote the same way, which is like, no, these are all free thinking individuals. And I don't see why they're painted that way. And then it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, well, I'm a Hispanic man, so I guess I should vote this way. Or I'm a white man, so I guess I should vote a certain way. And they start trying to push you into that. That's the pressure of, like, this is your tribe. Let's get you voting along with your tribe. And I think, you know, tribalism,
sure,
tribalism is the death of us. When we start getting tribal, and we you see this across history and different countries where this just kills nations. And we become too tribalistic at all costs. We lose our free thought. And the only solution, I think, is getting multiple parties up there, because it's much harder to paint someone else as a Hitler when you have four choices. You can't have everyone pointing fingers at everyone saying, you're Hitler, you're Hitler, and you're Hitler. You know?
I think that could work. I'm just not a big proponent of that we need a third party. I tend to feel like these things come in waves, even flow, and pendulum swinging, and I think this tribalism, it's really mostly pushed to by big media, right? They want this division. They tell lies day in and day out. I mean, it's amazing the lies they get away with. I mean, people say Trump lies. I'm like, yeah, but not as much as the media. They all lie, but like, let's not pretend the media is not lying too. I mean, the media is one of the most untrusted parts of this country. I think people are going to start to realize the media is just full of BS, and they start to branch out and look for alternative sources of media. And as you branch out to alternative sources of media and start to see truth, I think you become less tribalistic. Like I used to be pretty hardcore Republican, like, gosh, maybe a decade ago.
Yeah.
And I just got sick of Fox News. I got sick of CNN. And I branched out to alternate sources of media and found sources that I were trusting, even if they were somewhat biased or slanted. At least they were honest about it, and they didn't lie about the facts that they presented. And I became, you know, more libertarian that way. I have no problem throwing shade on a Republican, you know, even though I used to be more tribal and felt I had to defend them. And now I'm like, now, if they suck, they suck. Let it stand where it is. You know, Trump isn't all bad or all good. He's just like all of us. He's a makeup of all his good and bad and terrible decisions, right? I mean, we judge people based on a large set of facts. He has a large set of facts that show some great positives and a large set of facts that show some pretty big negatives. You know, he's not all one way or the other. Tribalism will make you think he's Satan or he's Jesus, right?
Yeah.
And so I think as people start to distrust the media, they branch out into alternate sources for their media and to where they can find the truth. And then they start to vote different ways. Like I voted some Democrat after that. You know, I voted more policy-based. I had no problem. I'm not tribalistic after that. To me, you know, I find that to be how I became less tribal, you know. But I don't know how a third party I'm not sure the logistics of how you would implement that.
Oh, I don't know either. And like I should clarify, I don't think that my idea is realistic. I just see this tribalistic, like every 4 years, it just seems like it gets worse and worse and worse. And yeah. I just feel like there's no solution that I see working here. You are fortunate, I think, and I think I'm the same way, where I am comfortable leaving my echo chamber. In fact, I prefer to leave my echo chamber and listen.
Why do you think I instigate people online so much? I try to get interaction with people of opposing views. Unfortunately, most of them out there just want to resort to base, lazy attacks, right?
Right.
But I sometimes think people don't know how to deal with me when they lob attacks about Trump and I don't immediately defend them. I'm like, yeah, probably true. You know,
right.
Like when people say blatant lies about him, I said, you know what? He's probably capable of everything you're accusing of him. I totally believe he is. I believe anyone in power is capable of those things. I just haven't seen the evidence of it yet. You know, or I see a little bit of smoke, but I need more evidence, you know, to be able to say that's the truth and make a decision accordingly.
Right.
People seem to be bothered by that, right? Bothered by asking for facts and things like that.
Right. No, exactly. That's exactly right. So, you know, I remember watching Bernie Sanders during the primaries on the Joe Rogan podcast. And it's like for those who don't know, Joe Rogan, he's one of my favorites. And I think most people who listen to the podcast know that about me. But man, I had my mind opened up by listening to him for 3 hours in a way that, you know, someone's talking to him without his little 2-minute, you know, pre-rehearsed rote memorization talking points to sit down and talk with him. And while I still disagree with most of what Bernie Sanders said, I came out of that thinking that guy cares about America. That's what I can. And I did not, I was like, that guy wants to dismantle America. And I don't believe that anymore. And it's something that I can, it helped me kind of understand where a Bernie supporter is coming from, because I think he is maligned and Donald Trump is maligned as well. There's a lot of things people say about Trump, and I'm like, I don't believe that. I believe a lot of things, but you know, there's certain lines that people cross. I'm like, I don't know about that. So, Tulsi Gabbard was another one that was on Joe Rogan, and, you know, there's just a lot of people, and I probably would have voted for Tulsi Gabbard if she would have got the nomination. She got royally screwed by the Democratic National Party, and same way Bernie Sanders got screwed. I mean, and they put Biden forward, and I thought for sure Biden was going to get just destroyed, landslide, done. He can't. The guy's like weakened at Bernie. He's a sack of bones. He's literally dying in front of us. And then he chooses Kamala Harris, who got like less than 1% of the vote during the primary. Like, she was like the bottom of the bottom as far as desirability from the Democrats. And that's who he chose. That's who he chose. So I thought Trump's going to wipe the floor with him. And that's not been the case. Have you been surprised at where we're at a day after the election day?
No, I'm not surprised.
You're not surprised.
No, I think, you know, I think this is to be expected. I think Trump's done better than I actually thought he would, honestly. You know, Trump's problem is he makes the election about himself instead of the record.
Yeah.
His record, and the media loves that. Cause when they make it about him, they can pull out all the bad stuff about him. You know, he's got too into himself. He couldn't make the election about him, about his record. He had to make it about him. Know, him versus evil, and the bad media, the bad Democrats. I just think that was a mistake on his part. So I didn't expect him to perform super well. I actually think he's performed better than I thought. He's gotten more of the black vote and Hispanic vote than any previous Republican has.
That's true.
In our lifetime. And so I think he's performed well in some areas, but I didn't think he's going to win. I don't even know what the results are yet. Do we know?
There's five states, I think, that are in play: Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, North Carolina. That's six. And, there's some mysterious things going on where some ballots have been found all of a sudden, like 100.
Yeah, we knew that was going to happen.
Like batches of 100,000 ballots that are all for Biden, like literally zero for Trump. And so there's some recounts going on. The Trump campaign has announced they're demanding a recount in Wisconsin, and I believe they filed court documents in Michigan to stall the counting until they have proper access, is what the statement said, to some kind of, like, you know, ballot overseeing type of operation. I'm not exactly sure how that works. Anyway, it's all above my head for sure. At this point, I believed that Trump was going to landslide right over Biden. I thought Biden can't bring what Hillary. Hillary was a machine. Hillary was like the top crime family of the world.
Yeah, but couldn't bring it. I just felt that. I mean, when I look back, I look at Donald Trump's a horrible, horrible campaigner. Right. The only reason he won the election, I mean, he lost the popular vote by quite a bit, but the only reason he won the election is because he was lucky enough to be running against one of the most dishonest and hated politicians in our lifetime, right?
Right.
Which is Hillary Clinton. She is hated. She's very off-putting. He was lucky enough to be running against her. She was passing out, falling into mans, and he still couldn't beat her, you know, on the popular vote. So that told me he's not a very good campaigner, you know, to begin with. And now this time he's running against someone who's half dead, and Kamala Harris is probably one of the most dishonest, you know, people I've ever seen on stage. I mean, she really is disingenuous on so many things.
For sure. And I agree with that.
And Biden's had one foot in the grave. I could, you know, and he could barely, you know, he was pulling behind him most of the time, which tells me Trump is just the bad campaigner because he made it about him. And when he made it about him, it was just for his supporters. And there's so many in the middle. They're like, yeah, well, I don't like you, but give me a pitch about how good of a job he did, and I'll go from there. Right. And he didn't do that. And granted, he had the media against him. He had an uphill battle, but I think he just fed right into it. You know,
yeah.
He's the type of person that is just, he can't help but double down on that stuff. But I've heard a good analogy. You know, he likes to jump on every rake in the yard, you know, and have her come up and smack him in his head.
That's right. Trump kind of, here's the thing. While I was watching the electoral votes count up, I looked at my wife and I said, you know, I bet if I like ran for either party last minute and nobody knew who I was, except that I was the red candidate or the blue one, I guarantee you I would get 200 electoral votes. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Like
you would.
Like I don't have to have any experience or say one word and I get 200. It's really that last 70 that you really have to try for. And of course, you know, that's kind of like, oh, it's super off-putting to me from our like political machine. Like that's like literally you could put any human being in the red position or the blue position and they're guaranteed to get 200 electoral votes. It could be the biggest idiot in the world. I was going to say a decrepit old man, but that's exactly what you got running.
Yeah. I think a way to get rid of some of this and get it more back. I just hate the arguing character, right? Because at the end of the day, we both have horrible candidates. And if you're the type that thinks your candidate's great and the other one's bad, then, I mean, I don't even want to have a discussion with you because you're blind. I want us all to admit our candidates are kind of bad. And once we agree with that, then we can get down to talking policy. We never get to talking policy, especially on social media. Everyone just wants to lob bombs. And I want to talk policy, and no one wants to. It's much easier just to lob insults and personal attacks.
Dude, that's...
But I would love to bait people into like good policy discussions because they just don't happen, which is why I wish the debates would go to more of like the Lincoln Douglas type debates where they talk for a long time and the moderators and they're just to ask gotcha questions. They're there to articulate their positions and they get lots of time to talk. You know, like you can't be asked something like, hey, how do you expect to reform police, right? And have 30 seconds to respond, right? It's just silly. It's the worst format.
It's embarrassing for our country that's what we've come up with. And there should be no time limit on it as well. Like on the whole event, if it's a 4-hour event, because they're it's a 4-hour event, start at a certain time and you let these candidates go until they're done talking to you. You need more of like a long form type of conversation. And any good candidate is going to want that because, like, even for me, like, I changed my mind about Bernie Sanders by listening to him for a very long time on a full, in-depth, comprehensive, get-to-know-you podcast, policy-driven. And this election, to me, has been void of any kind of policy discussion. Even the debates, it's more of a stylistic type of, like, popularity contest. It's a gridiron battle. It's a me versus you. And I'm better than you type of discussion. And it's not what's Trump's plan for healthcare? Like, I don't even know. Like he doesn't talk about that. He doesn't need to. Biden's going to go for those guys are all going to go for healthcare for all or Medicaid for all rather. So it's all a socialized medicine push, which is,
but no one's described. What does that look like? What does that, you know? What does that process entail? What are the
costs? They don't know. They don't know what it entails.
Yeah, they probably don't even know.
They just say Medicare for all because they get the claps. They have no clue what kind of damage that kind of system is going to do to the poorest among us. It's gonna throw them. It's gonna keep them in poverty. It's gonna do terrible things. We have these systems, and this is interesting. We have these systems in dentistry. Right, we have state run. Like I've accepted state insurance for dental for the entirety of my career, my 11 years as a dentist, and I can tell you, it helps out in certain situations. It's not completely useless, but it's not great, and it doesn't give patients choice and access. And those are the things that you want. You want choice, and you want access. And the truth is about medicine. Is that, you know, if I were to ask you, like, which is more capitalistic, dentistry or medicine, what would you say?
Obviously, medicine.
You think medicine's more capitalistic than dentistry?
Oh, capitalistic. No, dentistry, for sure.
Yeah, so...
Because the majority of what we do is elective.
Right. And all, and also, you know, we are autonomous operators, right? Lots of us, most of us own our own business, or we work for another dentist who owns the business. We have the autonomy of saying yes or no. We are the gatekeeper. Dental insurance plays a little role, private dental insurance, but private dental insurance maxes out after you fix one tooth, like one tooth, and you're done. So if you need more than that done in a given year, you're kind of screwed. And most dentists are pushing towards a fee-for-service type of model anyways, trying to get away from privatized dental insurance. So you have this model where you have more capitalism, meaning you have people out there giving deals like, hey, come do my cleaning is $50 promotion. And, you know, here's a whitening promotion. You have these types of promotions. You have marketing ploys to get people to come in and see you, and that's driving prices down. And now the other question, the other part, so dentistry is more capitalistic. Which one would you say allows more access to the layperson? Dentistry, is it easier to get into a dentist, or is it easier to get into the right doctor that you need?
Oh, dentist for sure.
Right. And so a lot of people kind of, you know, poo-poo dentistry, is like, you know, they make fun of us like we're not real doctors. And that's fine. We usually take that pretty well.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it too.
I'm fine with that. Yeah.
But what I think medicine can learn from dentistry is, hey, well, here's this model that works really, really well, actually, as far as like giving access to individuals. I mean, I run a never-ending promotion of $19 for an exam and a set of x-rays. So $19, you get in, that doesn't solve any problems except for it gets us to diagnose the problem, and we'll get you in same day or next day. So as far as access, I mean, you have Walmart getting into the dental game, for crying out loud. Walmart is going to have dental offices, and they already do have dental offices in select locations. That tells you a lot to me, you know, like that is to me the epitome of access, when you can go buy your Lucky Charms and a pair of socks and get your dental cleaning done in the same visit. It's ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
So you have Medicare for all, and that's, you know, getting back to policies, there was just not a lot of policy. Like, yeah, drive that home with Biden in the debates. Hey, what, like, explain Medicare for all. Like, where does private insurance still exist under your plan, or are you somehow going to wave a magic wand and make private insurance disappear? How does that correspond with Big Pharma? Because is Big Pharma going to get in bed with the government now? It sounds like you're just handing one monopoly off to another monopoly, and still going to be a monopoly. But except instead of private insurance having that monopoly, it's going to be the government, which I would argue that's a worse person to have the government to do that.
Yep, I agree. That's not.
Okay, let's move on to something that I, okay, so do you, you know, you've mentioned, I've heard you mention a lot, and you've mentioned here on the podcast today, like, you're not really too worried. Like, Biden wins, okay. Trump wins, okay. We're going to move on. We're going to be okay. Is there anything that you're fearful of under a Biden-Harris presidency?
Well, I'm mostly fearful of our citizens. Like, they've just become so, I don't know what the right word is, garbage.
Animalistic.
Garbage. Like, I simply asked someone online, like, hey, why do you guys care about this so much? Like, oh, the poor aren't going to get their food. I'm like, the poor are getting their food, right? That's like, people are getting jobs under both presidents. Welfare is being handed out under both presidents. Not like any of that stuff. You know, people just, they get bothered by asking for, like, just some evidence and facts, asking them to think through their logic. I'm more worried about the people. My usual thing online is I don't really like to get into, like, too much politics, but I end up doing it. But if you look at most of my questions, they're mostly about the person and trying to help them identify the hypocrisy in their logic.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think if we can identify our hypocrisy, then maybe we can get down to just talking policy, right? Because if we're going to just play about whose guy is better, right? But so my biggest worry is people aren't just going to come to realization how hypocritical they are. I think it's better to, you know, we can get down to policy discussions once you realize, you know, or at least stop being hypocritical about who's better than that. As far as policy-wise, being worried about with the Biden, you know, Harris, I think healthcare, I mean, I'm worried about that. You know,
yeah, me too.
There's a big push for that. But of course, they don't have the Senate, so it's not going to happen. So to me, I think a divided government is a good government. You know, I would be fearful if all the Republicans were all in power or the Democrats. So I guess I am worried about the push for that, but thankfully the Senate's there. You know, I feel like Trump's legacy, if he loses this, his legacy is, you know, they kept the Senate and he's got the Supreme Court to be a little bit more originalist. I think those will withstand anything that, you know, Harris or Biden could bring that's unconstitutional.
Well, that brings me to the one thing that I'm scared of.
So my biggest worry is just the division of our people. Like, half the time we're arguing over something. We actually both agree on the same thing. We both have the same values. We just disagree on the policy. So let's talk about the policy. Maybe I can shift a little bit. Maybe you can shift a little bit. Make a compromise. But you can't compromise with a Nazi, right? And so
I think that's
where they've taken us to.
Yeah, why would you even work with a Nazi? So, you know, I think the one thing I'm scared of, and I don't think they can do this without having a Senate, which they're not going to have the Senate control, but, you know, obviously there was a lot of vitriol and hurt feelings about the Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett, her nomination being rushed through, and I totally understand the, you know, perceived hypocrisy that people see. Though it seems like when Merrick Garland was denied that in 2016, it does seem like, you know, the Constitution was followed. They didn't have the Senate, and the Senate had the authority to do what they did, and they did it. And I think
it was not unconstitutional. It wasn't even hypocritical. All right,
definitely hypocritical.
I don't think he communicated it very well, you know, on what he was doing and why. But what they did was constitutional. The other side's just pissed that they lost. You know,
and the other side would have done the same thing if the roles were reversed.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no question, like, the Democrats have this weird moral high ground that they're not going to get a justice if they have the ability to. That's insane. So my worry is was the pack in the courts. Absolutely. Like, if they can just, like, wave a magic wand and get three new justices that Biden gets to choose, it's like, well, now what you've done is you've nullified
the court into a partisan political tool instead of this separate entity, which the founding fathers wanted it to be.
Well, and I think you make its meaning or significance just disappear, because then as soon as the Republicans get the presidency and the Senate again, they're going to pack the courts. Then if you do it, they'll do it. And then all of a sudden you're going to have 25 Supreme Court justices, and they're just going to favor whatever president and Senate is in control at the time. And the Supreme Court loses all of its meaning and significance to me. Like, no, was worrisome.
This is its significance. My biggest worry is I think something like that would set off a civil war. Because you think the Democrats come in and pack the court and ban guns with their new packed Supreme Court, you really think Texas is going to listen to this fake court that just came up with this, you know, banning something like that? I mean, they're not going to listen. Texas isn't going to listen. Idaho ain't going to listen. Some states are going to be like, no, we're not respecting the rule here, because obviously this is a packed court. It's a partisan court. Now what happens? Chaos, right?
Well, that's what I mean. The court loses its authority. It loses its, you effectively, like that, and that exactly right.
The court's new rule. Mm-hmm. Who's going to enforce the packed court's new rule? The federal government's now going to come and force Texas to do something. In Texas, he's going to be like, we just don't recognize this court anymore.
Yeah.
You know? So you're right.
The last thing that I'm concerned about, and tell me how you feel, because so this has been a rising concern for me since, I would say, gay marriage got was a talking point. One of the things that always bothered me about gay marriage, and just for the record, I am in complete support of homosexuals having the same legal recognition as heterosexual couples. I always felt weird about the word marriage. It's a new thing, gay people becoming married. Why don't you call it a new thing? Like, if I found a new species of animal that kind of looked like a giraffe, I wouldn't call it a giraffe. I would call it a brand new thing, right? So,
sure.
you know, I just felt... And I remember saying at the time, and it's definitely, I mean, I'm not putting myself as, like, prophetic, but it was just like, this is going to usher in the changing of language, because you didn't legalize gay marriage. You just changed the definition of marriage. And therefore, people always say you legalize gay marriage, but in reality, you just change the definition to be slightly more inclusive of more types of people.
Yeah, and that's a leftist tactic, to change the definition of language, evolve it so that they can then, you know, change it.
Yeah, but now...
That's a defo tactic.
But now you got words, and now there's words that I don't even know what they mean anymore, like racism. Like, I thought I knew what racism means, but I'm being told very different things. You know, I hear things about white silence is violence. And I was like, I'm thinking,
you can't just not be racist, you have to be anti-racist now.
Right.
You have to be anti-racist.
They're changing definitions, adding terms, and like just being not racist isn't good enough anymore. You're right. And so violence is interesting because white silence is violence. And I think, any kind of silence is violence. And I think, well, no, it's not. That's not violence. Violence is a different thing from any, accepted definition of the term that I'm familiar with. Privilege is another term. Gender, the definitions of genders.
All the discussions I've had recently with people, it's like, just define this for me and then we'll have the discussion.
Yeah, so there's a real power in language. And I had this conversation with a very liberal friend of mine. And because essentially, like... it's like I'm kind of forced in this situation to say that I'm not really supportive of gay marriage, even though it sounds terrible to say that. I'm in supportive of them having legal recognition. I'm not supportive of the watering down of language. And I said, one of the things that happens is like, when I meet someone and they say they're married, I don't know what that means. It's literally lost its meaning. I don't know what that means, and I need to ask more questions to find that out. And his response was, why do you need to know? And my response was, so that I'm not an idiot and I understand what things mean. Same reason I got to know what a shovel is or what the color blue means. In order to talk civilly and coherently with someone and communicate, I have to know the definitions under which you are operating. For example, if I said, my brother-in-law killed his wife. What does that mean? That's a fault in our, that's faulty language there, because brother-in-law could be three different people. In the English language, we have the word brother-in-law, which could be my sister's brother, it could be my wife's brother, or it could be my wife's sister's husband. And if he killed his wife, I don't know who's dead, and I don't know who did it. Like, that's the problem with like definitions and words, is that you don't know anything if you don't know the definition, and you cannot communicate with one another if you don't. So when we don't know what racism means or what one side is saying when they say that's racist or you're racist or you're being racist, we lose all ability to communicate.
Yeah, I tend to disregard people who pull out that line. You know, it's just lazy tactics. It's like, well, I can't beat you in a logical argument, so I'm just going to call you racist. I tend to just roll my eyes when people do that, and then that's when I'm like, all right, we're not going to talk factual stuff here. Let's just get into some mudsling. If you want a mudsling, I can sling mud too.
Yeah,
and then I just engage that way. I try to size up who I'm talking with. Like, are these people really wanting to engage in a productive conversation, or is this just like virtue signaling? If it's that, it's like, all right, let's just sling the mud. I can do that too.
Yeah.
But you make some great points about the change of language. It's true. I don't mind if gay people get married. I'm for that.
Sure.
I do think that marriage is a religious institution that was started, in religion, through history. And so it's really, if you're going to change the definition of it, I think they should be the ones to change it, not the government. Personally, I think government should be out of the marriage game altogether. Then we wouldn't have this discussion, right?
It just seemed...
Government should just be out of it and not matter. That people do what they want to do, they do it. But I don't think it was the court's role to redefine. It was the legislature's role. That's the way it was set up. The legislature was too wimpy and scared to do their job.
Yeah.
And so they basically set up a court to do it.
On the issue of gay marriage, obviously that was a super heated debate. Still is for some people. Not too much. It's kind of like accepted.
And
it's kind of passed. But at the time it was super heated, and it just seemed like a lack of... a missed opportunity, I think, to compromise. Obviously, the religious people in our country, which are significant and should be respected, had a problem with that. And I think there are definitely some that still would have had a problem. But to say, hey, this is something new and different and unique, Let's call it something new and different. And if you would have avoided the word marriage, you would have probably passed it way earlier. Way earlier.
Exactly.
You would have got way more support. You would have got what you wanted. It seemed like they were really trying to like turn that knife into the side of the Christians and really shove that home. Like, nope, we are usurping this word. And that's the way it was interpreted because that's the way it was approached. So I felt, yep. I always felt like, what a missed opportunity to like compromise and say,
confirmed.
Yeah,
and it confirmed all the fears that Christians or conservatives had about what the left was trying to do.
Yeah,
you know, and they wanted to use it as a divisive issue, and it didn't need to be.
Yeah, and that was the first time
government.
Go ahead.
I think that government stepping out of marriage altogether would have been great. That we'll recognize anyone, you know, tax wise or whatever you want, you know, equal representation, but. You know, we're getting out of, we're not going to call it marriage. We're getting out of the marriage business.
Yeah. And for the life of me, I don't know what's, you know, if there's nothing to be held sacred about a man and a woman being married, I don't know what's to be held sacred about the number two. Why is it limited to two people? There is no argument under the sun that applies to gay marriage. You can't apply to polygamy. I mean, essentially polygamy should be legal. I mean, like if people want to get married, and they're in love. I mean, love wins, right? Does love? I mean, so that's the thing. Equal marriage or equality in marriage or marriage equality was always a misnomer to me because it's like, well, not everybody who wants to get married can get married. Still, it's more inclusive of different people, but it's not equality because it's still not. And those people who can't get married, you know, incestuous relationships or polygamous relationships, the only reason they're not legalized is because of, you know, we consider that to be immoral. That's it. It's immoral. It's weird. Yeah. It's creepy. We don't like it. It has nothing to do with love. These people are in love. Man, I watched that Sister Wives show with that guy, Cody Brown. Like, obviously they, you know, for the most part, love each other. But, like, he takes good care of his kids. He's a contributing member of society. Like, why can't he be married to those four women if you know, all bets are out with the define, you know, changing the definition of marriage. Why that seems unfair for that individual to me. Anyways, I didn't want to just turn the gay marriage conversation. We're just talking about the changing of the definition, the redefining.
It's just not good. It's one of the things I fear because then it's just, you know, it is purposeful. I mean, it totally is on purpose.
It's malicious and nefarious. The changing of the definition of words to push an agenda is something we're going to see a whole lot more of, and that worries me. And that's something I people should look out for. Like, look for things that you think you know what they mean, and then watch out when they change that. They pull the rug from underneath you, and now that word means something different. That's dangerous when you're messing with the language.
Yeah.
Because now we can't communicate, because I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know, is that a giraffe, or is that a hippopotamus. I don't know how you're defining those terms anymore. And that we used to know, and now we don't know. And so keeping that straight is super important going forward. Anyways, any last predictions? I guess if you've kind of admitted you're not really paying attention.
Well, I'm paying attention to the way people are acting a little bit. That's more my concerns. I care more about how we as people communicate. You know, being winners or losers, or being sore winners or sore losers. I'm more concerned about people getting back to changing the culture, like actually talking to someone and not resorting to just cheap name calling, right? Stuff that Trump does, stuff that Biden does. You know, they resort to cheap name calling. All these politicians resort to just cheap name calling and labeling you, as opposed to actually asking questions and having a discussion. And I think we're just parroting them.
I think Trump ushered that in. I mean, Trump really made that acceptable. I think that's one negative contribution I think we can attribute to him is it's funny and entertaining, certainly. I mean, I can't deny that, but it's brought a pettiness to the office of the president, and that's unfortunate to me. American politics is changing, and it's looking like Biden's going to win this. So unless Trump challenges it, I could see it, you know, being challenged, declared for Biden, challenged at the Supreme Court, which of course favors conservatives at this point heavily. And, you know, that is going to be a sore spot for a lot. That is not going to calm or put people at ease. That is going to raise the stakes for people. They're going to feel, they're going to feel robbed.
People need to take a breath.
Yeah.
Democracy is going to work itself out regardless. I mean, Trump's been kind of an orange boob in the White House, but totally. It's kind of interesting that an orange boob has actually governed pretty well. I mean,
policy-wise, he's okay.
Got more foreign policy that's been way better than, you know, anything we've had before. I mean, he surprised me. It goes to show that maybe anyone can run this country, right? You might take a shot at it.
Well, I could win 200 electoral votes no matter what party I went for. I guarantee you I win 200 and I do nothing. And here's the other thing too. This bothers me too. Campaign finance is a ridiculous amount of money, and I can't tell you how much that bothers me. The amount of money, like if you think about just the Democratic primaries, everybody but Joe Biden, all the money that went to those people, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars wasted. Just burnt. Throw it out the window. It's like the scene from Batman when Joker burns that pile of money. That's what I think of. And then and then all the money that goes into electing, it's $1 billion. It's at least that much. And the idea that you could infuse that into the economy in some way or stimulate the economy in certain ways and the amount of good you can do, that's the kind of thing. So now with this nonprofit I do, I don't know if we haven't talked about this too much, but I have a nonprofit called the Halo Dental Network. And I just think about, crap, like I'm like ecstatic if I get a donation of like $100, you know, and like these guys are like burning millions and hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's just like, geez, it's just for what? The politics at play here are just over my head because I don't understand how anybody with that kind of money feels like they're getting a good deal or a good investment. I mean, I guess if I had the numbers, I guess maybe I would see differently, but I don't understand that.
Yeah. It's all about power. I mean, every profession in this world, we are counting down the days which we can retire, right?
Yeah.
We're all retiring at 65. We're counting down the days we can lock out and retire earlier, right? There's only one job in this world where people are fighting to stay in that job, and that's politics, right?
Yeah.
Like, why on earth would Joe Biden not want to be on the beach with his grandkids enjoying them instead of being the last 30 days of his life?
Yeah, totally.
It's been the last 30 days of his life. Yep. I mean, Trump's a little different because he spent his whole life playing, you know, and wants to do this now. But, like, still, at his age, at Hillary Clinton's age, like, what possesses you to want to stay in the game? And politics is a dirty game. It's a hard game for him, right? All the travel, it's harder than probably most jobs.
I think
what on earth would make you want to stay in that job other than power and ego?
Well, I think you get a bunch of money, and once you get a bunch of money, a bunch of more money doesn't make a lot of difference. Like, money has diminishing returns. It's a happiness, right? Like, you're happy when you can pay your bills. After that, you know, you can do fun things, but the more money you get, like $100 million wouldn't mean much different than $200 million to me, right? There's no, it's these diminishing returns, but it's an extra $100 million. Like, I'm not going to say no to that, but it's these diminishing returns that, but you're right. What you find the next currency is going to be power or influence. And that is definitely what seems to motivate these ultra wealthy individuals who have $100 million to burn every election season. And that's a very interesting dynamic and scary as well.
Yeah.
Hey, before I forget, we do a secret word every single week on this podcast. And the secret word is worth $500 of free dental work at my office. So we do a secret word. And then the first person to email that secret word to drilledpodcast@gmail.com gets $500. Actually, we're changing that. It's not the first person anymore. It's the fifth person. We changed it. So if you missed it, you can still, maybe get in on that even if you weren't the first person to do it. So maybe to lead us off here, to say goodbye, Wade, can you think of a secret word that you'd like to put forth there that'll win somebody 500 big ones at my office?
Do you want me to say the big word?
Yeah.
All right. Let's go with China.
China. China. That's a great word. Okay, the secret word is China, everybody. You heard it. So the fifth person to email me the word China, either in the subject or body of the email, either one is fine, is going to get 500 big ones. If you can't use it yourself, we will allow you to gift it to somebody else who can use it. So that's kind of cool. It's a wonderful gift. I want to thank Dr. Pilling. Jeez. Yep. Terrible. This Dr. Pilling, thank you so much for coming on. By the way, he is a fantastic dentist. How can people follow you? You have an Instagram?
I have an Instagram, Dr. Pilling or something, but Facebook. I try to post a lot of my work.
Yeah, he posts a lot of his work. He does amazing work. He's in Boise, Idaho. If you have the ability to go and see him, you should definitely go and see him. He's an amazing dentist. He lectures and he's an instructor. He works, you're an instructor for Implant Pathways, which is an amazing implant, dental implant CE course for dentists. But if you're interested in learning that as a dentist or interested in being a patient, he is definitely a great guy to look into for all that. Wade, thank you so much for your thoughts. I'll be sure to forward all emails and hate mail to you directly should we receive any.
Sounds good.
All right, appreciate everybody. It. Thank you very much. And join us next week when we have something else going on. Not sure what that'll be, but it'll be something cool. Thanks for tuning in and keep listening.